Thanks for listening to our podcast. We've got more information and additional resources at probe.org/podcast. And be sure to check out our life-changing Summer Mind Games Camp for high school and college students.
Do you vote your conscience, your worldview? Do you vote at all? Well, Byron Barlow examines this sacred duty of citizenship now on Probe.
Chuck Colson commented months ago that if you're not already weary of the presidential campaign, you must be living in a cave. Meanwhile, the media pursue earth-shattering stories like which candidate owns the most pets. Then, a new kind of presidential debate had candidates responding to homegrown videos posted to the internet. Two of the questioners chosen were a pair of guys dressed up like hillbillies and an actual snowman, supposedly worried about global warming. Well, it's kind of hard to take politics seriously with all the theater, isn't it? But political engagement, including the most basic kind, voting, is a God-given, blood-bought right that Christians should take seriously to be good stewards. Christians are called to act like preserving salt and truth-revealing light in our culture. Kirby Anderson wrote, "Christian obedience goes beyond calling for spiritual renewal. We've often failed to ask the question, what do we do if hearts are not changed? Because government is ordained of God, we need to consider ways to legitimately use governmental power. Christians have a high stake in making sure the government acts justly and makes decisions that provide maximum freedom for the furtherance of the gospel. Yet Christians remain on the sidelines in alarming numbers. In 2004, only a third of evangelicals even planned to vote. Aren't we the ones who should be the most concerned of all about moral values and government? By voting, free citizens get to choose God-fearing leaders, much the same way Moses commanded the Israelites to appoint them. Who better to choose than Christians who are sanctified by God's grace and taught by His Word? Before heading to the polls on Election Day, we voters need to do our homework. We need to differentiate between worldviews and read between the lines of media reports, wrestle with the tough questions. A godly mind sees beyond the moment and isn't taken in by what one commentator called regionalism and other types of groupthink, like ethnic and age groups who vote in lockstep. That is, vote your own mind. God's will and kingdom won't be thwarted, and we aren't going to fully control outcomes, even as a large voting bloc. We just need to do our due diligence in voting and trust God with the results. Colson, a convicted Watergate felon, said, "All you have to do is lose the right to vote once, and you would never again find any excuse for not going into the voting booth. Be a good citizen. Exercise the greatest right free people have."
You've been listening to Probe with your host, Byron Barlow. Get your free copy of Byron's transcript, Voting and Christian Duty, at probe.org. Again, that's probe.org. And join us next time as we deliver the whole truth and nothing but the truth here on Probe.
Last year, for the first time, Senate deliberations opened with prayer led by a Hindu priest. I asked a group of homeschool Christian parents if they could justify forbidding this, and nobody could come up with a good answer. There may not be one. Pluralism, when a culture supports various ethnic backgrounds, religions, and political views, is a practical reality. And that seems pretty different from the days of the Puritans, who first colonized this country and called themselves the New Israel, a people chosen by God. The architects of our political arrangement, many of them professing Christians, were deeply influenced by the Puritans' faith and the way they affected the culture for good. Daniel Webster said, "Our ancestors established their system of government on morality and religious sentiment. George Washington, a devoted Christian, left room for others. He said that unbelievers have the same rights as believers, but that the best foundation for government is still biblical religion." So how can such a firmly entrenched Judeo-Christian political heritage be reconciled with a culture that's increasingly full of Mormons, Hindus, Muslims, and unbelievers living right alongside Christians? The Constitution Bill of Rights allows for religious and political diversity. 19th century theologian Charles Hodge said this about immigrants: "All are welcome to equal rights and privileges, whatever their religious feelings, and are welcome to vote in every election. All are allowed to worship as they please, or not to worship at all if they see fit. No man is required to profess any form of faith. More than this cannot be reasonably demanded." Christians, especially evangelicals, have gone from being a majority in a culture defined by a biblical understanding of life to an often despised minority in a secularized culture. So how should we respond? Theologian Richard J. Mao explored the possibility of evangelical politics that doesn't compromise and at the same time is highly tolerant of other views. Not anything goes relativism, but rather confidence that comes from God's guidebook for life, tempered by fair-minded ways of dealing with people. He wrote, "This humility does not exclude Christians advocating social and political policies that conflict with the views and practices of others. It does mean that we should do so in a way that encourages reasonable dialogue and mutual respect." Our nation is based on an unmistakable Christian foundation, but that doesn't mean you have to be a Christian or even believe in God to participate. Ever since Jimmy Carter ran for president based partly on his evangelical faith in the 1970s, and then the moral majority took the nation by storm in the 80s, there's been a nonstop discussion in America about faith and politics. Former movers and shakers like Ed Dobson claim that political power seduced and blinded believers. He said, "One of the dangers of mixing politics and religion is that you begin to think the only way to transform culture is by passing another law. Most of what we did in the moral majority was aimed at getting the right people elected to have enough votes to pass the right laws. In those days, Christians seemed to believe that they could legislate and administrate God's kingdom into full flower. However, core issues like gay unions and abortion remain largely unchanged, or even worse today. Jeremiah the prophet warned, 'Cursed is the man who trusts in man.' History has shown us we can't rely totally on laws. A good example is prohibition. The harder the government cracked down on alcohol, the more ways people found to get around the law. One result was increased crime. Laws don't change hearts. They're meant to restrain evil. So what's a Christian citizen's role? Many thoughtful people believe Christians have been commanded by Christ to be involved. 'Render unto Caesar what is Caesar's' means more than paying taxes. Ed Dobson suggests some basic biblical principles. All political power comes from God. Government has a God-ordained role to play in society. Christians have a God-ordained responsibility to that government to pray and submit to and honor government leaders, and of course to pay our taxes. The Lord appeared to Joshua before a battle. He discovered that the issue wasn't whether God was on his side or his enemies, but whether the people were on God's side. The religious and political left talks about the poor and the environment, while the right emphasizes the unborn and the family. Both say they speak for God. Seeking God's priorities and using his wisdom for our particular times is critical. God's side is not always easy to find. As one politician warned, 'Watch those who even imply, a vote for me is a vote for Jesus.' The late D. James Kennedy warned in the early, heady days of the Reagan Revolution not to idolize a politician. 'Ronald Reagan is but a stone in the sling, and you do not trust in stones,' he preached. 'You trust in the living rock, Jesus Christ.'" Talk show host Larry King asked pastor and author Max Licato if religion should matter in a presidential election campaign. I love his answer. He said, "Well, genuine religion has to matter. We elect character. We elect a person's worldview. Faith can define that worldview. And 72% of us say that religion of a president matters. Recent polls show that Americans would sooner elect as president a Muslim or homosexual than an acknowledged atheist. Candidates in any race who are thoroughly biblical may be an ideal choice for believers, but they are rare and seldom run winnable campaigns. Should we elect a person who claims to be a Christian? Well, it depends. Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney received a standing ovation when he said, 'We need a person of faith to lead the country.' But faith in what or whom? Romney is a Mormon who presents a barrier for evangelicals and others who don't believe his faith is placed in the God of the Bible. The politically influential Dr. James Dobson caused a stir when he critiqued one candidate for not regularly attending church. Dr. Richard Land responded that this is not a deciding factor for him. He said that as a Baptist minister, he would never have voted for the church-attending Jimmy Carter, but did vote twice for the non-attending Ronald Reagan. This, like so many others, seems to be an issue of individual conscience for voters." Former Senator Bill Armstrong stated, "God was able to make sons of Abraham out of stone. Certainly he can make a good legislator out of someone who isn't necessarily even a Christian, or may even be an atheist. So I don't think we ought to limit God by saying only Christians deserve our support politically." Some people who support Romney, the first ever Mormon presidential candidate, say we can agree on values without agreeing on theology. For example, Mormons and evangelicals have agreed on issues like abortion, pornography, and gambling. Christian apologist Ravi Zacharias reminds us that we're not electing a minister or church elder. He said, "I think as we elect, we go before God and choose out of the candidates who will be the best ones to represent sanctity of life values, and at the same time be a good leader whose first responsibility is to protect citizens." Lots of issues are disputable matters. Think through more than a few pet issues, then vote your conscience. Certainly, there won't be a perfect candidate who falls in line on all our values and priorities. Never discuss politics and religion. Well, maybe that's wise advice when Uncle Harry's over for Thanksgiving dinner. But as a rule of life, it breeds ignorance and passivity in self-government. We need dialogue, public discussion. Some prefer a public square where anything goes but religion. Well, that would be wrong. Likewise, a so-called sacred public square with religious values imposed on everybody? That would be unfair, too. Christians ought to support a civil public square with open, respectful debate. But you often hear statements like, "Christians shouldn't try to legislate their morality." They might simply mean you can't make people good by passing laws. Well, fair enough. But all law, divine and civil, involves imposing right and wrong. Prohibitions against rape and murder, for example, are judgments on good and bad. The question is not whether we should legislate morality, but rather, what kind of morality should we legislate? Yet tragically, as iVoteValues.com says, many believers don't even consider their values when voting, often choosing candidates whose positions are at odds with their own convictions. A Pew Forum study found that nearly two-thirds of Americans say that their faith has little to do with their voting decisions. Many believers are missing a chance to be salt and light to the watching world. Well, what about the cases when the field of candidates offers only the lesser of two evils? For instance, you can't decide between the more pro-abortion candidate who's otherwise highly qualified or the anti-abortion person who has some real flaws. Some believe that if you vote for the pro-abortion person for other important reasons, then you're not responsible for any abortions that might result. Others see a necessary connection. Vote for a pro-abort and you are guilty. Study and pray hard on such issues, as God gives you freedom of conscience. Government support for the poor, sanctity of life, war fighting, peacemaking. What are your convictions? Which one weighs the most? Decide based on a biblical worldview. See probe.org if you need help. Remember the pride of Iraqi citizens with their purple ink-stained fingers who voted at their own risk for the first time in decades? They testify to the priceless privilege of voting in a free society. Americans gave blood and treasure to free them. Let's don't let the same sacrifice our ancestors made for us go to waste.